right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and I'm owner of Youngstown Computer. And this show we're putting together to sort of encourage entrepreneurship and business owners. And whether or not you are a current entrepreneur or business owner, you're aspiring one, you're just dabbling or thinking about it, I figured we needed some real estate here to have a platform to be able to discuss it amongst people who are, you know, in the same neighborhoods and have the same interests. And, you know, interested in community support and growing the economy and adding more jobs here and getting the pay rates up and all the property values go up and just creating a better environment overall. You know, country was founded and built on that mentality. And what, you know, if you sort of get stuck in the news cycle of negativity, then you're going to think that things are pretty bad and there's no hope and there's no opportunity. Well, entrepreneurs right now are looking through the landscape and there is opportunity everywhere. And, you know, forward looking, when you start seeing, you know, the changes that everyone has had to, you know, to take on, there are new services that are going to come out of this. There are going to be new products that come out of this. There are going to be new demands that come out of this. And as an entrepreneur, you can sit back, you know, kick back a little bit and try to picture and imagine what is going to happen next, and you start formulating products and services around what's going to happen next. That's the funnest part of what we do. And it's not necessarily, you know, I've never been a big one. You know, I'm a industry creator, not necessarily just a join in buy a franchise because I want to do the practice of business. I like creating things. I like making stuff. And, you know, I'm in a cycle right now where I was pretty much service oriented. Everything that I created had to do with someone getting a skill and then reselling that skill. Got really good at it and found, you know, huge marketability for having service creation or entrepreneurship and service creation. And then I thought, you know, I've got a little deficiency over here in physical creation, things that are of physical value, being able to, you know, create design, protect, then manufacture, scale up, distribution. That's a whole nother animal in of itself because you're dealing with things that don't have feelings and you know, you're dealing with markets that change. And that's a fun one for me because, you know, I've dealt with, you know, human capital is amazing. I love dealing with talent. I love dealing with people who have skill sets. I love people that can talk back, right? And it's fun because you can sort of mold people. You can take someone who has absolutely no skill set whatsoever, and over the course of time, you can build them into someone who is who has tons of capabilities, and then help them realize the potential of those capabilities. That's fun for me. And then, you know, on the other side, manufacturing something, you take raw materials that aren't valuable or are not very valuable, and you add a skill set or a design or an idea or a process to it, and make it into something else. And then again, you've added value to a block of raw materials. So that's where the game that I'm in right now. The third deal that I'm going to dabble in is food services. And when I first started getting into business, my wife and I had this heart to heart, and she was okay with just about every business venture that I could imagine. Right? She was cool with reselling things and manufacturing things and doing services and pretty much everything. But the two things I said, do not, no matter what happens, let me get involved in these two things. Number one was food services and one was bar. Two of the most competitive businesses on the planet. You have to be very, very, very special in order for to have a high margin on either one of those two businesses. It's really tough work. And so, you know, now when I told her that I didn't want to do it, and that was when, at a time when I probably couldn't weather a failure. And so if I were to take on a restaurant in the midst of being over leveraged in other areas, then it might just end me, and that was it. So, but when I get to a certain point, there's going to be a challenge where I'm going to see if I can reinvent the bar industry or the restaurant industry in my way, and that's down the road or so. But I knew out of my natural wheelhouse, those two things were going to be not something that I can get overly passionate about. I have a huge appreciation for food and drink. People who do it well, you could really. You know, I'm all over it. But as far as walking into a restaurant and say, you know what, I can improve this, .. There's not very many circumstances where I thought that I could add anything to that industry. But that's at the last page of my book will be food services. Now, that's not to say that there won't be somebody who comes along, who I could see being really good in food services and help them get into that industry. I just don't personally, myself, my entity, my enterprise to be food services quite yet. So I wanted to share that because here's a new thing. I'm always looking out for ways of teaching my son how to kind of like warm up to business ideals. Because normally, hanging with friends and going to school, you're going to get normal socialization. You're going to get the skill set to be able to participate as a human being amongst other human beings. But if you want an entrepreneur, there's a different mindset in an entrepreneur. It's a total different way of thinking. And that's why having this real estate to talk about business, aside from regular thoughts, is very necessary. Because I'll tell you, when someone comes up with an idea, they're on their back patio and they're sipping some wine and they're coming up with an idea. When that thing pops in your head, it's at its most vulnerable stage, right? It has just been born. It can't survive an assault. You can't have a realist come along and poke holes in it. It's not ready for that yet, right? It's just born. And so just like any other idea, it needs to be nurtured. And I tell everybody that out of 10 ideas, 9 of them are bad. 1 of them are good, right? And all 10 of them stay in my world, right? They circulate. So I take 9 of them that aren't ready. Either I don't have enough money, or I don't have enough education, or I don't know the right people, or for whatever reason, that idea isn't real great for me right now. And I take the parts of it that made me arrive that I want to do that, and I write it down, and I put it on the shelf. Because I will, at some point in my business career, take one of those things down off the shelf. Just I came up with the idea way before I was prepared for it. But after a couple thousand different ideas and a couple hundred different trials at those thousand different ideas, and you get a sense for what you can conjure up pretty quick. And so the education, I'm taking my son's education in business and modeling it after the way that it naturally occurs. And it does it to everyone. I mean, all of us. I haven't worked with a single person that didn't get super passionate about something and think they're going to do something as part of their living. Almost everybody that I've ever run into has that, whether or not, they like doing yoga, so they want to do yoga instruction, or they like doing art and they want to sell art, or they're a musician and they want to sell their music. All of those things are sort of like, first stage business ideas. A lot of them don't ever become full-fledged businesses. Some of them go to hobbies, and that's good enough. Some of them just stay in idea stage forever. But an entrepreneur thinks about things a little bit differently. When you see an opportunity, when I walk into a concert or I go to the symphony, right? I'm looking around at all of the support stuff somebody had to pay for to be able to put this stuff on, the lights and the structures and the audio and the visuals and the seating. And I'm just picturing everything that I would have to do to work up an enterprise to be able to do something to that scale. And all of that is possible. And so when I'm talking to my son, I have to use concepts that he can relate. Like, I'm not going to say, hey, let's go open a pet store. Because I'll tell you, pet store was my first. I wanted to open a pet store like it was nobody's business. All right. And I wanted to do it way before I had actually any money. But I still went through the whole planning and processing for opening a pet store way before I knew that I could ever do it or ever afford it. And the deal was, calling suppliers up and asking, how much I would have to purchase to be able to get price breaks and setting up wholesale accounts. And I never purchased a single thing to put in a pet store, but I went through the routines of establishing a pet store. Well, it was okay, but I could see if at the end of the tunnel you didn't really put together a pet store, I can see how some people would be a little bit, taking the wind out of their sails, right? Because again, vulnerable, there aren't too many people in your world that's going to tell you that go ahead and do it and that's a good idea and, you can do it. There's a lot of realists in our lives that shoot down these little ideas and tell them how it's going to be hard and you probably can't do it and you're not going to have enough money and nobody's going to want to buy it and stuff like that. And honestly, they don't say that because they're mean. They say that because they love you and, they're trying to protect you and keep you safe. You got to understand that when you put those words through those filters. So when I come out with an idea, and I've been doing this long enough that I'm unaffected, I can go out there and publicly and say, I'm going to do a thing and I believe in it, and I do it, and it's a flop, right? And I'm by the time you're reminding me how much of a flop it was, I'm already on to the next three things. I stay very little at the table when there's something on the table that didn't go well, right? I don't reminisce in it. I don't beat myself up over it. If I did something dumb, I make sure that I remind myself it was dumb. But as soon as I know that it was dumb, I move on. It's not about torturing myself. There's tons of other stuff to do. But anyway, so what we're doing here is I'm over the summer, I'm going to create three small businesses. And these are like really small businesses. These are like only a couple steps above a lemonade stand. Because all of us, I mean, when we start entertaining this, I sold baseball cards. I had a lemonade stand. I had a bike shop. And I had a flower shop. Why? Because I looked around and these things were available where I had a bike and it needed fixed. I wonder if other people need their bike fixed. And then so I started buying the tools to fix bikes and oiling chains and doing paint jobs and then offering my service to friends. I don't know that I ever sold anything to any of my friends, but we went through the routines of setting up a supply-demand type of distribution, right? I oiled some chains, I'll tell you that. I straightened some handlebars, did that. And sat out and sold some baseball cards and sat out and sold some lemonade stands. And those were those introduction to the marketplace. Now, a lot of your customers went down the street, didn't really want lemonade, but they bought it from you anyways. But you got the sense of somebody had a thing, you had a thing, and they exchanged their thing for your thing. And that was the intro to business. And I took that super serious, and I wanted to learn about the psychologies and habits of why people do things. And you have two ways of business, the way that I started. Either one, you identify a demand and then you try to do that demand too, right? So you already capitalize on something that already is. And then you have the second thing where there isn't something, but you make the something and then you market the something and then you explain why somebody needs the something and then you sell them the something. Far harder, right? But far less competition. The worst deal is that you create a market. And then you have to, after you've done all the heavy lifting, other people jump in after you've created it. But that is the name of the game. That's what keeps this fun. I don't get real, if something already exists, unless I literally can create a skill or have a source or distribution that's better than someone else, just joining the crowd and charging the same thing that they are. I mean, I'm not super interested in doing that. That's not, the object of my entrepreneurship spirit. Entrepreneurial spirit is not money. Money's a byproduct, right? I like to improve the value of things. So if I don't feel like I can walk into a restaurant and make it better, I'm not really interested in just doing it too. And so what I'm teaching my son and what I'm planning to do over the summer is creating these three enterprises, and I'm going to hire younger workers. And these are people that they're going to be. It's going to be part time work, and it's going to be real close to minimum wage. And I got in trouble over a couple days ago where I announced that I wanted to just extend this to young workers and got accused of not liking old people. And it couldn't be further from the truth, but I laugh at stuff like that when it happens because people are just so they're sitting there on a bag of outrage and they can't wait to lash out to somebody who looks like they deserve some of it. So, but again, I'm far enough down in my career. I just expect that stuff, but I roll my eyes every time it happens because it's annoying how quickly people pounce on you and try to hurt you with that. So anyway, these three enterprises, I'm looking for to sculpt someone who is just getting started. And I said young workers because I typically think that younger worker would do really well in this. I'm not opposed to taking someone who's older that doesn't mind making close to minimum wage and learning how to do business. It's like college. Some colleges have older people there. They want to go back and get some education. Most of the people in the room are younger, and that's why I refer to it. But anyway, if I can get some new spirits and take them through the enterprises, what I'm interested in doing, listen to this. Not only do I just want to hire some people, right? So I purchase all the supplies. I secure all the locations, I fully stock it and capitalize it, and now I'm ready for a worker. Now a worker comes in while I'm doing this and I teach them how to run the show and build what we just did. And then I'm interested in converting that worker into an owner, like super quick. And the reason I'm starting with really low-hanging fruit enterprises is because the cost of entry is super low, right? Cost of entry is basically, if everybody has $100, then everybody can get into something that has a cost of entry of $100, right? The higher the cost of entry, the less people can compete in that. So if I wanted to open a car manufacturing plant, the cost of entry would be more than I have, and it's not a real big chance that I'm going to be getting into that market. And so keep the cost of entry low, get some of these spirits that want to do enterprising and just need to be taught, teach them how to do the marketing and all the principles that go into running and establishing a business. I'm a growth guy, right? So taking a small enterprise, I could turn a small enterprise into something that is scaled up to be super huge because, you know, I check the numbers when it's small. I take all the components and I assemble it like it's a working thing. I'm not doing charity work where I'm not working inside the business for free. I'm actually stocking it with the people. I'm stocking it with the payrolls. I'm stocking it with the marketing and the supplies. And I'm going to take a total cost. I'm going to find out how much sales I have to support that cost and grow that into other markets. Then I have to look at the markets, make sure it could support that kind of growth, and then it's game on. So this is, you know, just because it's going to be a low-hanging fruit type of enterprise does not mean that, you know, the mechanics are going to be any different than if I opened something that was brand new and invented an enterprise. And so, you know, you've heard me complain for years in this area. Two things that I was just petrified of. I had lots of customers who wanted to retire and they could not find anybody to take over their business. And not just take over it where somebody was going to buy it. I'm talking take it over as in, if I hand it to you, would you be willing to run it? And the answer was no. The age group that was coming up to replace the entrepreneurs scared me that they were just absent here in Youngstown. So I kind of planned on creating our own entrepreneurs, creating more capitalists, creating more people with that entrepreneur spirit, and then giving them raw meat in front of them so they can do something, like build some jobs here and build some companies here in Youngstown. All right, 330-729-9977. You can also text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier. We're going to create some entrepreneur spirit here in the Valley and give you guys a place to talk about and ask questions about any business things that you may be dealing with. I want to urge a lot of hobbyists out there to kind of take their ideas, dust them off a little bit, and maybe give them a chance to be realized into something. Before that break, I was talking about some of these enterprises that I'm starting up that are going to be, you know, some concession type of businesses. And I'm inviting any parents or grandparents that want to take some of their grandkids or kids and sacrifice them on the altar of business and send them my way. I'm going to be handpicking a lot of the people that we partner with and out of this group. I can foresee being able to use this as an excuse to get to know a lot of young talent and when they have young talent, really feed that talent and make them into, you know, not wait till they have to go off to college and get into their professional career, but, you know, try to unveil this stuff when there's not much pressure to be able to do it. You would see, like, when it's there's not the pressure to go into a profession, that you're more willing to take a couple more risks than you otherwise would. And that's part of the entrepreneur spirit, is calibrating your risk meter so you know what benefits are on the other side of what risks and making them proportional and appropriate. So if anybody wants to sacrifice the young ones on the altar of business, send them my way. You can either get me at my email, joe@youngstowncomputer.com. You can find me on Facebook and message me. There's a couple of kids I'm going to be interviewing next week for this very purpose. And it's sight unseen. I pitched the deal and a couple of these people were like, yes, my kid is super smart and unchallenged. And that's what I'm looking for, is kids that, you know, are like really operating way below their level, but they're on par and they're doing good scholastically. And, you know, they're hanging in there. You got no worries about that they're low or anything, but it's an idea, you know, that they could probably be above where they're at right now if given an opportunity. Well, this is something that doesn't come along often, where you could, most enterprises want kids to work some labor and whatever. I mean, this is like going to college. This is like going to small business school. And I get to use real laboratories where all of these things will be fully functioning. They're not going to be a, you know, put up a token amount of money and lose your butt and just do it for the sake of teaching people. These are going to be fully functioning enterprises that follow the same protocols and processes that all my other companies do. And just because the product's different does not mean it escapes the gravity of what business is. And so if anybody wants to get a hold of me, feel free. You can call my office, 233-0259-7278. And I assure you, I know there's a ton of you who've said that you have interest in sitting down with me and talking about some of these ideas. And I've been going 1,000 miles an hour these last month, and a lot of you have been waiting a couple weeks. And I know that, and I promise you, I will be getting to you very shortly. And so just leave, get in queue and be patient with me. And then we'll make sure we got a comedy show that's going on downtown. And so that I'm interviewing and auditioning comics down there. So you can see I have a lot of stuff, a lot of irons in the fire. I've always been that way. But anyway, 330-259-7278. That's the phone number at the office if you're interested in nominating or sending your kids or grandkids my way. Feel free. I will treat them very well, and I will give them an education like they can't get elsewhere. All right, I'll be back after these commercials, 330-729-9977. Feel free to call, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I'm Joe Danier, and I am your host, talking about things that are happening in business, as well as giving some pretty good advisements about those of you who are just starting or encouraging those to get started, as well as we are going to be partnering and coupling with a bunch of businesses around town in hopes to be able to grow enterprises and retain enterprises. Lots of stuff eroding. A lot of people are choosing to not push their business into the next generation and just shut it down, and it's just a total waste. The big question I get pretty much every week, and all newcomers, they think that their biggest objective is to clearing financial hurdles. And I want to open a business, but where do I get the money? And so I want to spend a couple minutes to kind of take you through some of the philosophy on you're starting a brand new baby business, and there's a couple of ways that you can fund your little baby business. I've probably opened 20 businesses so far in my life, and I've never started any of them with either loans or borrowing, partner, investment. I've never taken outside money in order to start any of my enterprises. And I was willing to start any enterprise that I could make work on paper. And so if I could make it work on paper, there really wasn't any of my – I wouldn't pick any enterprises that had a bunch of startup costs. So you have maybe one bucket that has a bunch of startup costs and one bucket that you can do just out of pocket, out of cash flow. And I've always been a cash flow. I've been extremely good at being able to take my last $100 and figure out a way to make it to $7 and then take the $7 and reinvest it and make another $2,000 and take that $2,000, make it into $10 and keep repeating the cycle over and over and over and over, right? And so I consumed, $100,000 in startup capital, but I spread it out over a period of 2 years worth of development. And that's the price you pay when you build out a cash flow that you can't grow beyond your successes. And in my case, that is such a good thing. If you're bad at something and you don't want to take $100,000 of somebody else's money and make a bunch of mistakes with that money, and then you've used up people's willingness to give you hundreds of thousands of dollars for your ideas. You got to prove those ideas out first. Now, if someone gave me $100,000, I'd be pretty, it would just speed the process up. And I know that I'd be pretty good for it as far as making someone money on top of their investment. But new business owners make two really critical mistakes. I'm going to call them mistakes because they're mistakes for me. But a lot of you do it, and it complicates things a little bit as far as just my opinion and my perspective. The willingness to take on partners. All right. The business world's a really lonely thing, right? It's you and you, and you wear 17 hats, and it's you. And it's tough to have conversations with you. It's tough to have arguments with you. It's just you. It's a really lonely thing. So a lot of times you'll get a partner because you think, hey, you know what? I'll have another person. I'll have twice the resources. I'll have twice the manpower. I'll have somebody to bounce stuff off of. And that complication I see turning poor more than anything else that there is. And the problem is that you have two people. It's like a marriage. Now, if you come across somebody who you would like to marry that you're doing business with, that's the kind of commitment that you have to have with someone. Because think about it. You have to make sure that they stay true to the relationship, that they don't skim money off or start their own thing off the side. They would have to be all in and be monogamous with the business. They would have to keep their personal life straight. Because I'll tell you, when you have crazy at home, crazy comes to work with you, crazy destroys businesses. Now you have twice the amount of people that could either start dating or marrying or spouses or family could turn into crazy, right? You just increase your chances. Now you can handle your own, but you're talking about somebody else's crazy coming to town that has equal voting power that you do within a company. And then the philosophies change over time. You might be long haul. You might be, I want to do this and grind it for 30 years. And that other person might want to, grow it up and sell it off to someone. And then when you have two people who, when time goes by, change their objectives, which even if they thought they had similar objectives at the beginning, what's the chances of somebody's conditions at home changing and they have to change their objectives? So that's number one, is including other people for the sake of having a partner, someone to bounce things off and share. I see it more often than not work out. There's got to be a lead person. And I don't mind two things. I don't mind, one, if you get two people who start their own companies and just do cooperative work. So if you have in the construction company, you have one guy that does the materials and the field work, and you have one guy that does the bidding and the contract work, right? So you open John's contracting company or contract company and one field service work. You have two people who have two different companies that now they work together when they want to. So they have to keep earning each other's business. It's not like they're locked into each other even if they don't want. So if you're going to have a partnership, just have a separate cooperative partnership, not a legal partnership where you have to marry into someone. And then just like everything else in business, you have to have a plan B. If you have one bank and one account and something happens, you're screwed, right? You got to have one bank. And then what happens if that bank goes down? You have plan B bank. And so you want to make sure that if you have a cooperative agreement with somebody who's providing an essential service for your company, you have to make sure that you know who your plan B is, even when they're still in your world. That's like your side chick, right? If you line up a side chick, know who you'd go to if your primary flakes out or something like that. That's the analogy. That was a terrible analogy, but you get the point. And then the second thing is having a cache of money to get started. And, you know, I worked with a guy that wanted to open a mechanic shop. And we put together what the business plan was, and we started allocating resources. We started writing down everything that was going to be necessary to be a mechanic. So he's writing down tools and shop rags and an air compressor and a vacuum and a car lift and so on and so forth. We got down to the bottom, and he said, you know what? In order to do a mechanic shop, I need $100,000. I said, okay, cool. And I said, how many customers do you have tomorrow? And he says, zero. And I said, what about next month? And he said, zero. And the next month, zero. So the question was that his idea now was writing a check for $100,000, and hope was trying to get a customer lined up to be able to pay those bills. And so I didn't disagree with someone buying all of the equipment necessary to start working, but I know that there's a ton of equipment that already exists out there. And that the two most infinite materials are financial resources and materials resources. They're everywhere. You want to buy a truck? There's a truck down the road that nobody's using, right? If you're a good negotiator and a good dealer, you could probably somehow negotiate use of a truck without ever taking possession and having it at a price tag that's way better than now having ownership of it. Because I could sell, like, if you rented me a car and you rented it to me for $100 a day, right? I know that I would be more likely to be able to make good on using that car in a productive way to make back my $100 one day than now buying a car and having a monthly payment. And maybe I'm only paying $50 a day, but now I'm paying $50 a day forever, right? I'm more likely to be able to prove out that concept having rented it for me one day, even if it's more expensive. And that's what it ends up being. I'm going to buy one of something. So if I wanted to do materials and I wanted to buy a sample, do I want to buy a pallet of it or do I want to buy one? Well, if you buy one, it's going to be $30. If you buy a pallet, it's going to be $5. right? You're not going to buy the entire thing because what if you change your mind and that's not the one that you wanted to buy? Same reason why you don't overextend yourself and opening a mechanic shop, buying all of the equipment on day one. It'd be better to take a mechanic shop that maybe has a extra stall and say, hey, can I work with you a little bit and use that stall, I'll lease it from you, and I'll bring my own tools and whatever, and I'll bring my own insurance. I'll make sure that I'm not a liability at all. How much would you rent that space to me for? And that they might say no, but you might have to ask 20 of them before someone will let you share space and cooperate. And then you might never know. Just cooperating with that other mechanic shop, they might be able to take some of their work when they get over extended and farm it out to you as the shop owner that's next door. Trust you, sees your work in the same building. You might have a built-in customer. So anyway, that's when you start exploring. If you don't have $100,000, that means you have to be creative. You have to invent ways to still accomplish the same thing, even if you have to drag it out, make it cost a little bit more money, and make it take a little bit more time. And the way that most entrepreneurs, when they come to the table, they're either going to have a surplus of one or the other, sometimes both, but one or the other usually. Either they're going to have more money than they do time, or they're going to have more time than they do money. And no matter what they have, they're going to be investing in what they have plenty of. So if you get a high school kid that just graduates, has no job, has no liabilities, doesn't have any money, right? But guess what he has? Tons and tons and tons of time. He can take that time and invest it in things and almost with a 0% return, right? Because he's got a ton of it. So he can be wrong a whole lot. Now, as he starts aging up and getting into career and he has less and less time, but now he should have more money. Now he can use some of that money to buy back some of that time. And so that when entrepreneurs want to have a lot of time but want to just start writing checks for $100,000, I want business ownership to be a blessing. I want you to make a good living. I don't want people to go into business and think that you have to suffer for the first couple years of being in business. But that's, I see it happen a lot of the times. And it's only because somebody, didn't give you the hard truths going into it that if you're going to do a bunch of time, like you're going to sacrifice a bunch of time and not make any money, you're only going to do that for a short period of time before your brain checks out, your family checks out, and you check out, right? That's got a time and expiration date on it for sure. So getting in really good with, and again, I can't say, even though I give these philosophies, it doesn't mean that I would frown on someone spending money. I don't care. If you want to spend your money, you spend your money. I'm saying that when I talk to people who hit snags, these are the reasons why you hit the most suffering is because of this. And you get in a partnership, two guys sitting in a bar says, hey, we can open a bar, and they partner up and they go get a bar. I mean, all the things that could get in your way, all the things that can happen, as long as you know I'm going in, you can plan for them. Hey, guy, if you get a drinking problem and you're my partner and I don't want a guy in my partner who's spending all the bar's money on drinking, how do we handle it? Well, we'll do this. And see, if you talk through it before that stuff happens and properly plan through it, then you could have a good outcome. But it's going to take that proper planning in order for that to happen. Okay. I mentioned last hour about the enterprises that are going to be created. I'm going to share these business plans as we write them up. And so if you're interested, like I said, you just let me know. Find me on social media and let me know that you're starting a new business and you'd like to peek in on my homework as I write this stuff out. What am I looking at? So the first thing was a tropical snow business. And I'm sure you've seen it in tourist areas. They have this brand, Tropical Snow, and it's shaved ice with flavoring. And you thought maybe it was like a franchise, in this case it's a brand that you become a distributor for. And one of these businesses is, I have to make sure that if I were to sell Tropical Snow, that I would have to know how much I would have to sell, how much I would have to pay for it, and if it was the best use of my capital. Because if you have $100 and you just come across an opportunity, it might not be the best opportunity. There might be 10 opportunities. It might be one that makes money, but not the best for your $100. And so your situation is going to dictate whether or not that's the best use for your $100. So when you write out these business plans, there's a lot of them that I wrote out that I've not exercised. They're still sitting on the shelf. There might come a time when I have the opportunity to exercise some of them, but right now they're just sitting on the shelf waiting for an opportune time. But anyway, if you want to peek at some of my work when I put this business plan together, because we hypothetical, we go out into research mode and we take all of the details of the opportunity. How much does it cost? How much do I have to buy? Who from? Do I have a secondary supplier? What's the cost of shipping? Minimum order quantities. And then you keep going down the list and gathering what the costs of materials. And then you got to think, okay, well, I'm willing to do it for a day, but I want to hire this thing out. So I'm going to build into my business model that I hired somebody on day one. So it's going to take a $10 an hour person to sit behind a counter for 8 hours. That's $80 plus the 10% in payroll costs. So it's going to cost me, $88 a day. So materials cost plus labor cost. Then I also want to grow the company. I take 20% of revenues and I use my revenues for growth, whether that be marketing or advertising or customer retention. I use 20% of all gross revenues for growth. And so if I make 10,000, and here's how that works. So I set my percentage and my budget goal based on what. So let's just say I do all the math, and if I was at 100% efficiency, I would make $10,000. And if I'm not leaning on it, it's going to do about half of that, so about 50% efficiency, so it's going to do $5,000. It's somewhere between those two. Usually it's at $7,500. So I set my budget as when I think the business model is going to come to life and get to 100%, it's going to be at $7,500. And then I set my percentage budget to what I'm going to do with that cash. Even before a dollar has come through the door, I know where the first dollars are going to go because I basically just took it through these hypotheticals. That's what your business plan does. It puts you in the driver's seat as if all of these things were circulating around you. And then you get to calculate things that are likely to happen. And, when you're ferreting out things that are unknown about a business model, that you want to do that before you get started. So if you need licenses or special insurances, or you need to have permits, or you need to have inspections. You want to discover that before you've spent a dime. Because what happens if you put up the money and find out that you don't have enough to do it correctly or you can't comply because of lack of cash? You don't want to put yourself in that position because then you're screwed. And I'm telling you, every government, every agency that allows business to practice, your ignorance or what you didn't know is not a reasonable excuse. They will not accept it and say, oh, you didn't know any better? Cool. Well, forgive it. No, they hit you with fines and fees and they embarrass you and you make you feel like you don't want to do it anymore. So you got to be careful. And, I'm an optimistic person. I want you to go out there and try. I just don't want your first attempt to be a stumble. And then you think that the business is what sucks rather than it's you who sucked. And all of you have the capabilities of doing this if you take it through, the proper, proper procedure. And you get a little bit further down the line and then you can hedge a little bit more. You can take a little bit bigger risks and, you can shoulder a lot more failures. In the beginning, you have to play as conservative as you can possibly get. You put yourself out there a little bit more. You're more willing to risk time than money. But there was one time I was buying inventory. I had my last $700 worth of inventory in my office. And I got broken into overnight, and my inventory was gone, and I didn't have insurance. And I'm looking around thinking, okay, I owe this to a customer. If I don't have the inventory, I don't have the service, and my last $700 just went out the door. And I thought, this is a terrible spot to be in. And it's moments like those that if somebody would have told me about it, I would have been like, yeah, okay, whatever. But when I'm in, I'm like, oh, this is dumb business. This is how you barely survive, you struggle, and you almost go out of business. And so I learned from it not to do that kind of stuff. And before I make major purchases in inventory, I make sure that I can cover myself and I'm insured and I know what happens if, what I don't want to happen happens. So and a lot of business is defense, but it's not the imagination that you're defending against. Once you do the imagination and you do the ideas and you put these abstract things down on paper, then you put the realities down there. Not that you're not going to do it. All of these realities just say, I'm protecting myself from making this the last try, because that is the goal with business, is you survive your mistakes and you capitalize on your victories. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to take one more break here, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to The Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everyone. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I'm Joe Danier, one of my favorite new entrepreneurs. And I don't know, she's not new anymore, but Sarah Russell, she owns Sarah's Cleaning Service. She was messaging over on Facebook and said, register your business. Sole ownership is my biggest advice. Sounds like someone who's been through the mistake of having multiple people on the ownership of a business and then having to pay that consequence. Second thing is, she said that her newest idea is a parking lot trash pickup at night. Businesses are swimming in trash. That is one of the things through this whole coronavirus thing. You're going to find opportunities in the marketplace, again, that people aren't doing now, or things have changed to the point where there's just a void in the marketplace. And it would be super helpful when you see those things, say, hey, is there anything I could do? Do I have access to, you know, the materials to be able to pull this off? And Sarah also says that 9 out of 10 ideas might not pan out. That's exactly right. And you have to really get comfortable with being wrong and failing. Because if part of the process is that you realize that something was either not a good idea or not timely, the quicker you do that, the better. I like to fail within the first 15 minutes, right, before I'm so overextended. Because a lot of times we just hang in there because we're stubborn and we don't want to be made to look silly. So a lot of times we'll carry a bad idea for the next 50 yards, it being a bad idea, and we know it because we're too embarrassed to admit that it was a bad idea. But if you talk volume, if you get into lots of stuff and you know that you can shed a couple of them without too much heartbreak, that's really what you have to get comfortable with. But as far as the financing go, I want to just cap this off. Whereas I don't want you to try to look for financing and think that it's the only offer, but I will tell you there is an unbelievable amount of investment money that is sitting on the sideline. And you know that investment money is not charitable money. You know that someone who has money wants to, with the least amount of effort, make the biggest amount of return that they possibly can. And not all investment money is going to, like, strip your bones out. A lot of people, you know, they want you to be successful too. But having an investor is like having a partner who doesn't want to do any work. They're going to give you some money, and you're going to have to give some of your victories to someone who just lent you cash. I want it to be my cash. If I have a victory, I want it to be my victory, right? I don't really want to share it with another person, especially one who didn't work quite as hard as I did, didn't have enough as much skin in the game. Once you give someone that money skin in the game, then you know they get to benefit equally as you. Again, there's investment money, and there's smart investment money. I've been offered probably 7 or 8 times to have just a block of money. People just want to see me doing 1,000 different things. They want to be involved. They know I'm going to hit gold on a bunch of them. They want some of their percentage in with my percentage. And I look around and think, why would I want to dilute my percentage? What benefit? I mean, I'm not none of my ideas are starving for finances. Everything's fully capitalized. Everything's cool. Your money coming to the table would do what? It would really make me stress out, because now I'm worried about your money. With my money, I don't, you know, I'm not concerned. I'm completely confident with my own money. But when somebody else's money in there, I worry, because I don't want to lose your money. And so when your money's in the game, and then secondly, that I owe answers to people. I would be able to, if something goes wrong, I'd have to explain myself. Right now, I don't have to explain anything to anybody. I'm fully capitalized, and I get to share the spoils with 0 people, or just of the people of my choosing. And I almost feel like I got a bias against investment money. It almost feels like when I come across, I'm trying to convince you not to do investment money. But in reality, some of you are going to have to take investment money. But I just need you to realize that when you share in that, that the money that they come, that the investor brings to the table, if it was really the only thing that you were lacking. You had distribution. I mean, you're looking around, you have orders, $2 million of the orders, and the only thing you don't have is raw materials. So not taking the investment would mean that you can't fulfill orders. So if they bring the money, you fill the orders. If they don't bring the money, the orders sit there. Now you have a good investment, because you're comparing two things. Inaction would cost you more than action, right? But if you can't see that, if all you're doing is diluting a product and having a partner so that you can clink glasses together with them at the sign of the victory, just saying, don't do it. So again, bank money, SBA money, private investor money. Of all three, I think private investor money is probably the most plentiful and easiest to acquire. All you really have to do is convince another human being, if they put money with you, there's a way that they're going to make it back. And there's a lot of small business or venture capital money that will put their money into really, I'm not going to say outlandish, but very progressive ideas. And so if your idea is really hard to explain, like a bank would look at you like saying, hey, show me the balance sheet and the profit and loss. And the venture capitalist is going to be like, hey, you know what? Do you like surfing? You know, those are two different. And again, no one's ever asked me surfing. Anyway, the overall theme is that there's an infinite amount of money. That's never a thing that I've ever had trouble coming across. When I needed money, I was able to manifest it. I was able to find it somehow in some way. So I would not sell off the baby for finances. The one thing that you want to put your emphasis in is you and your plan and what you know and your processes. And then the rest of it will kind of just come together when you need to. So, all right, future shows here. We're getting back to normalcy. So I think we're going to be able to share some actual examples from people who we've helped to get their stuff going again. So stay tuned. We'll be back next week with the Bottom Line Business Show. Next is Youngstown Computer Show. Have a great one, guys.